This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today I'm with Sarah Boyack, MSP. What were you doing whilst you were away, first of all?
Well, the first few months I went in and started working at Heriot Watt University, where I used to be a lecturer before I got elected in 1999, and I taught town planning students, architects, chart surveyors, building engineers. And what really struck me was how far things have moved on in terms of young people's awareness of climate change and how we re-engineer our towns and cities. So I did that for up until the April of 2017. And then I got a job with the Scottish Federation of Housing Associations, which was fantastic because as somebody's campaigned for affordable housing for all my adult life, to be able to go in and lobby for that was great. And the way I describe it is when I was in the Parliament first off, I used to get complaints and I used to deal with constituents' issues going directly to housing associations or private landlords or the council. Then I got to see the best of housing associations for 2.5 years. And now I'm back to dealing with where things have gone wrong, antisocial behaviour, getting people the right tenancy or accessible housing. So it's a really useful experience to have, and I kind of feel I'm back in the thick of it now, back in the Parliament.
So how is it to be back? Do you feel that you're, you know, there's other things that you perhaps had started before that you're picking up on, or is it all new stuff for you?
In some ways this place feels different because there are more parliamentary questions to ministers that the presiding officer has initiated. That's good. But I would say what I worked on before I left, I was working on a members' bill on a tourism levy.
So that's tick in the box.
Centre stage. So I'm getting to work on that issue again on the local government committee. I would say the things I've come back to is the issue of homelessness, the issue of people getting access to NHS treatment. So right through, everybody focuses rightly on the problems in hospitals, particularly the sick kids. And the huge delays and the problems and the overruns there in terms of cost. But getting access to GPs, getting support for social care, getting the care people need on mental health, particularly for children, those issues have been centre stage the last few weeks in terms of issues that people are bringing up to me in terms of casework.
You know, how do you feel that you know, the Scottish Parliament here works with the local council? Do you think that's a good merging? I know there are lots of people there that you know.
Yeah, well, what I've been trying to do in the last few weeks is make sure that the voice of Edinburgh residents and the challenges the council faces are actually heard in the Parliament, because I do feel, certainly since the SNP took over the leadership, that there's been less upfront challenge or request for resource. So things like housing, things like social care, the health and social care agenda. Some really good stuff, been working with Councillor Cammy Day, the deputy leader, and the work he's doing on poverty reduction is fantastic. But as you say, these are long-term issues. So for me, short-term, it would be health and social care and funding. So Edinburgh's
of course,
got a tourism.
Cammy Day did write whilst he was acting leader.
That's
he
right.
Wrote to the Scottish Government about funding.
He
was asking because he thinks that the council is underfunded by the Scottish Government.
Yeah, council's underfunded, and we've got a particular problem in Edinburgh, which is that we are not just short of affordable housing. And by affordable housing, I obviously mean social housing, whether it's council or co-op or housing association. But the cost of private rents is just increasing because it's a rationing process. So is the cost of housing to buy. And I know people, particularly young families, who would historically have lived in Edinburgh. They went to university here, they've had kids, but they've moved out to Fife. So areas like Dunfermline are now, there's a lot of people who used to live in Edinburgh, but you can see the same thing in West Lothian, Mid Lothian. The Greenbelt around Edinburgh is under massive pressure. So that issue of losing properties. So a long time ago, we'd be losing to bed and breakfast or hotels, where whole units in the city centre, so maybe 10 flats, would all go into one hotel. Now what we've got is Airbnb. And when I say Airbnb, it's short-term lets in general. There's different providers, but it is a major problem for us.
But was this not one of the things that you did whilst you were in MSP before? I seem to remember it was, you know, Sarah Boyack and party flats were all the words that ran together.
Yep. So interestingly, I've not had so many party flats issues, but the issues, well, one of the issues I worked on when I was away before I got my last job was I worked on the law of attainment issues with a group of people coming together to look at how can we ensure that flats actually get the repairs they need. So short-term lets can be an issue because people are not committed to the stair. It can be a can be either a litter or an antisocial behaviour issue, or even somebody just being noisy and smoking in your stair. One of the things that 3.5 years on is obvious is a lot of stairs have got key boxes outside.
Yeah, it's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it?
And that really tells you that that property's rented out. Mm-hmm. In some areas, it can actually be because an older person has a carer coming to look after them, but mostly in the city centre, we're talking flats that are rented out. So I would say that's accelerated since I left the Parliament. So I'm going to have to redouble efforts on amount of housing that's available, a much tougher look at how many properties are not actually available to Edinburgh residents anymore. And as a capital city that's got a tourism industry, it's not about choosing between the two, it's about getting a balance.
When is the Scottish Government going to decide on the tourism levy?
Well, that's something I've asked questions about since I've arrived back. I am absolutely convinced it has to be in place before the next Scottish Parliament elections. There's one or two bits of legislation that I think are important. There's something called compulsory sale orders, which is another tool in the box for land reform. So in the last Parliament, we enabled communities to get access to properties that weren't being used or had been left derelict and vacant. Mm-hmm. So you're beginning to see communities come through.
It's a wee bit like a community buyout.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We had that in the rural areas of Scotland, but in the last Parliament, just 3 years ago, we extended that to urban areas. So people are beginning to use that opportunity, but there's some parts of Edinburgh where you've just got vacant properties and people are waiting for something to happen so that they can make money on the property. And that's that brings down an area, but it's also a missed opportunity in terms of housing.
But then that is completely at odds with using greenbelt land for housing. You would think that you just use what's there first, but of course that's a more expensive route, I suppose.
Well, sometimes it can be more expensive, especially if you're dealing with an area that's had properties in it that has to be cleaned. One of the things that we're seeing in the north of the city is quite big redevelopments around the Granton area. So there is development taking place, and you can have relatively dense housing that is of high quality.
Yeah, there's some lovely houses just around the back of Pennywell at the shops there.
Yep.
There's some beautiful houses.
So really good housing going up. One of the bits of unfinished business actually is that I think that where somebody applies for planning permission for a vacant site or for a piece of agricultural land, the value rockets because it's been given planning permission. That then makes it more expensive for people to buy the land for housing or for development. You've still got infrastructure, then you've got schools. So it's something called land value capture. So as a former town planner, it's something I'm quite interested that we push in this Parliament.
So what would you like to happen with that? You'd like, even though the land has planning permission, you would like it not to go up in value?
No, what would happen is the land is there, somebody puts it up for planning permission, it gets planning permission, the value of the land rockets, so the local authority would get some of that back. You wouldn't get all of that profit, but it would get a contribution, and that would help with the affordability of putting up new infrastructure, which is something that other Edinburgh taxpayers currently pay for. So I think it would be something that would be good for our city.
Or I suppose the other way that can be paid for those through the Section 75 agreements, which the developer has to enter into with the local authority, so that they actually then say, yes, we'll put up a local primary school or something like that.
Yep. That's another way of doing
often,
it.
Yeah, all too often, though, they're not desperately well enforced.
No. So again, this comes back to local authorities having the cash to do what they need to do. So mm-hmm. It's interesting, the local government committee, we've been taking evidence on this. We sent our letter to the minister this week, a bit of a challenge. Some areas where we all agreed across the parties, but one of the big challenges is because education and social care are hugely important to us and are ring fence in terms of government funding. Areas that aren't getting financial support, like road repairs, like community facilities, support for young people, that can all be preventative. They're really suffering. Planning, I think, the cuts 40% over the last decade. So for a city like Edinburgh, we need the opposite. We need good quality planning, not cutting back to the bare bones. So, yeah, for me, a lot of unfinished business, and it has been a real privilege get to campaign on those issues again.
We asked Sarah about the shocking news of Gorgie City Farm, which had gone into liquidation in autumn 2019.
Out of the blue. And Gorgie City Farm is an institution in the area, but it's been an immense support for many, many families over the years. For local residents, it's a calm space. They go and visit the animals, see the pets. The experience of having that kind of quality urban area and the biodiversity it brings is something people really value in Gorgie, but it's a wider benefit to the community. So the absolute need is to get the council to pull people together and make sure that the land is protected, that it's saved, and that it's still used for that type of use. So a community facility, but also one that's very much about our local environment.
So it's busy now that you're back here in Holyrood?
It's been phenomenally busy, and the first couple of months I didn't have any parliamentary staff, because the process of advertising for staff and recruitment is not instant, so fully staffed now, so it just, there's so much to do, and those issues of health, access to mental health, and young kids waiting months for getting access to support, it's just not good enough. So it, and things like the Sick Kids Hospital, we campaigned to get it. The fact that it's years late, over budget, 1.4 million a month for a hospital that's empty. And I've had lots of parents getting in touch, some of whom were devastated because they'd expected their kids to be moving in the summer, and it was literally a day's notice, I think, people found out they couldn't move. So it feels very much real day-to-day issues that are not resolved. And for me, the opportunity being back here is to push for the things that people need in Edinburgh.
Well, it's great to see you back here, Sarah, and very nice to talk with you, and I'm sure we'll hear from you soon.
Many thanks.
You can read the full-length version of this story and, of course, all our other stories online at www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.